Welcome to Leadership Decoded, a weekly podcast where through insights and interviews, I explore what good leadership looks like. I'm David McQueen, executive coach, speaker, and host of this podcast. My main aim is to keep the podcast long enough to cover the subject, but short enough to create interest without losing the adverts. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Leadership Decoded. Hey you, I hope you are well. I am currently recording this on June the 25th, the hottest day so far of 2020. I am here in my office, sat in a t-shirt, only because I'm recording these videos now on the podcast on video, and wearing the vest that I had on earlier is not really going to do my image any favors. So I'm here in my Gap top instead. That aside, I want to talk about talk and the concept of self-talk for leaders. And when I say leaders, and I think I should emphasize this every time when I talk about Leadership Decoded, leadership for me is not about title, it's more about function. Sometimes you are going to lead because it is a situation. Other times you're going to lead because you are in a specific role and reacting to a team. Other times you might be leading a whole organization. And many times you're leading self. But I wanted to talk about self-talk. And so I'm going to give you the background for this, just to give you a sense of understanding why I want to focus on self-talk today. So for those of you who don't know, my parents are from the Caribbean. I am the son of Caribbean expats to the UK. My father is from Grenada and my mother is from Barbados. And growing up as a kid, we received a number of mantras that we had to listen to. One of them was, keep your head down and keep out of trouble. Another one was, don't bring police to my door. In other words, keep out of trouble. Don't even think about pursuing a career in sports or arts. We need you to follow a career in the professions. And probably the most pertinent one, and the one that's most memorable, and the one that has influenced this podcast that I'm doing today, was the one where they told me, you have to work twice as hard as white people to get ahead in life. Now, it's a phrase I still hear shared amongst black parents of Caribbean and African heritage. And I later learned that it wasn't just within the black community, but it was also common to South and Southeast Asian parents and many migrant families who made their way to the UK. There was a sense or superiority of white colonial Britain, and the benchmark for getting ahead was to be able to work twice as hard as white people. And in many respects, that's one of the things that I have been talking about this month, when we've been having a lot of discussion around black lives and the mattering of black lives and what things like white privilege and white supremacy looks like. And often people get really offended who are white because they think, you know, I was born from a specific class or grouping, and so this concept of white privilege doesn't apply to me. But on the flip side, what white privilege really was that it was the benchmark for a lot of us who were migrant families to work towards or to aspire to be, because there were limited opportunities. And yes, you are a minority. And today I was on LinkedIn and I felt the need to discuss what I find is a problem with this phrase about working twice as hard. And I mentioned that I never tell my daughters that they have to do this. I will always say to them, I need you to work as hard as you can. And yes, there may be people around you, but you have to stay in your lane. Think about the skills and talents that you have. Think about what you bring to the table rather than comparing yourself to anybody else. And primarily for me, I don't think that I should raise my children to feel in any way inferior to another racial group or to anybody else, to be honest. For me, it was always about focusing on them. And my advice was, you know, if you are told to work twice as hard, firstly, how do you measure twice as hard? And secondly, why are you comparing yourself to other people? And thirdly, and I put this in, and I know it created a bit of debate, but why would you willingly put yourself through such trauma in terms of being able to create this language that will be traumatic to you, that you always feel that you're inferior to somebody else. And in some cases, people do that because of gender, maybe orientation, maybe race, whatever it is, class. Why would we place ourselves in these positions? Yes, of course, privilege exists. Yes, of course, there are biases and different prejudices and various isms that we have in this world. But why would you place front and center in your mind that you have to work twice as hard than someone else? Now, I was challenged on this. Somebody told me that, you know, it's very easy for me to be able to say that. But I said, no, I think it's wider. I'm happy to be challenged on that. But I think it's a lot wider because, you know, my kind of formula or alternative to saying you have to work twice as hard is, look, work hard, work smart, build a network of individuals, stay in your lane. And again, I'll emphasize staying in your lane is about knowing what your skills and capabilities are and not trying to look elsewhere to try and do everything. Keep focused. Understand basic economics and workplace politics and just basically do you. And to come back to the point where I was challenged around me being able to be in a point of privilege where I say this, I am privileged. I am definitely privileged. Both of my parents are still together. I come from a stable family where there was no real trauma. Okay, like, you know, for many people who were born in the 60s, well, late 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, physical discipline was a thing. In many ways, I've resolved that for myself through counseling and through conversations with my parents. But generally speaking, my upbringing was very good. I was surrounded by excellent role models in my church, in my community. I grew up seeing doctors and lawyers and people who are entrepreneurs, people who aspired. So yes, definitely I had that sense of privilege. And from a very young age, from about 14 or 15, I started doing youth work because I wanted to help other people. I saw my dad doing summer schools in Harlesden where we left. It was 18th floor of a block of flats, and our flat would be filled with about 30 students with their little notebooks. My dad would be teaching maths and English. He said it was important to understand grammar, or important to understand numbers. And that thirst or that desire for numbers and literacy and numeracy stayed with me through all my life. Even more so that I started youth work in my late teens, started doing it primarily first in church, identifying really bright students. Then I did some teaching, helping students to pass their exams. I specifically gave back to members of the Black community. And then as I got older, it got a bit wider, started to think about students from working class backgrounds. And then even as I got older, I was mentoring students who were going into Russell Group universities like Oxford and Cambridge and Warwick, working with them. And one of the things that struck me all the time was that wherever I go, was it was about the language that we spoke, how we talk to ourselves, that self-talk, how we are able to sit with the fact that we're going to have two voices in our head. We're going to have the positive self-talk and we're going to have the negative self-talk. But that language... And again, I couldn't put a specific word on it. I didn't call it self-talk at the time, but just how we think and how we speak to each other was really important. And while I was working and still, you know, holding down a full-time job, I had my first career as an accountant, then in IT before I jumped into all of this. A lot of how I was able to get ahead was around, I always went to a job going, look, I'm really good at what I do. If you hire me, then really good for you. If you don't hire me, then it's your loss. And for some people, that might seem ignorant or arrogant, but I always immersed myself in books and in knowledge and read my encyclopedia and novels and individuals who were successful. And a lot of what I realized from these individuals, a lot of it was around mindset, how they set themselves up. And, you know, my parents weren't able to articulate that in a way, but what they did is they opened up a world to me around how I could learn and how I could be able to navigate the world in such a way that was going to be beneficial for me. And don't get me wrong, there were times where I did have negative self-talk. I did doubt some of the things that I was going to do. I flopped my GCSEs first time around because I had what was called positive confirmation bias. I overestimated my talent. I overestimated my capabilities. And when it came to the exam, I got a rude awakening because I wasn't ready. And I had to go back and I had to do well and, you know, did my A-levels, went to uni for a year, et cetera, et cetera, went into my career. And a lot of it was just about having a sense of realism and also challenging a lot of the negative self-talk. For many years, I believed that I wasn't worthy of money. I believe that, you know, the love of money was the root of all evil. And even though I walked away from what I call organized religion 11 years ago when I was 40 officially, it still took me a lot of time to unlearn the fact that I can have wealth and I can create generational wealth and I can be rich and not feel guilty about it. And I had to flip it out. The language is not about feeling guilty, but thinking, right, Dave, if you have got money and if you are earning, you can afford for your family to have opportunities to be able to travel, to your kids to go to the best schools, for those young people who wanted mentoring to be able to support them without having to pay. What were those things that could be done? And then even when I started working in young offending institutes or pupil referral units where kids were kicked out, again, it was about that positive language. I'd say to these kids, right, you know, you can sit down there and have a self-talk and woe is me and talk about all the things that are stacked up against you. And I'm not invalidating them in any way, but would you like to be able to have a conversation about how you can change this? Because I can give you examples of loads of people who came from criminal backgrounds, from Malcolm X to any kind of character who was able to turn themselves around. I'd sit down with these young people and and sometimes older ones, and we'd crack jokes, we'd create a sense of rapport. And once I've got that sense of rapport, I would say to them, go out and be your best. You really have got to be your best. And it kept me on my toes as well, because there were times where I slack and I'm like, I can't be telling people that they've got to be their best and myself, I'm not doing it myself as best as I can. And even at the bright old age of 51 now, it's still a constant challenge that I have, but I prefer to fill my mind and my thoughts with the positive, while still being able to recognize that there will be negative in there as well. But knowing that if I'm going to push myself forward, especially in terms of my work and my career, I've got to do it with positive language. And that was why, for me, I felt that this whole phrasing about having to work twice as hard is negative. Coming up to today now, the majority of my work that I do, even though I still have some times where I do work in education in schools and in colleges and working with teachers and students, the majority of my work now tends to be in larger organizations, primarily corporate, but also in the public and third sector. And again, when I'm coaching, whether I'm doing one-to-one with senior executives or emerging leaders or doing group work, a lot of it for me, again, is around mindset. What's that language? What's the linguistics that we are feeding into our brain so that we will follow through? You know, we will reduce the impact of instability and psychological or psychologically not being well and triggering things like various forms of mental health just by the language we use or the environment that we're in. And again, it's a complex thing, but for me, the language part is incredibly important. And self-talk is quite key. And in the corporate space, I have a number of individuals who, when I am coaching them and I'm picking their background, I'm picking where they come from, and I'm picking the language and the phrases they will use when they don't think they can do something or they don't think they can achieve. It's so interesting to understand the backgrounds and the concepts as to why you won't talk up in a certain environment, or if you're from a certain class, you may hesitate to speak in front of somebody who may be wealthy and come from a different background. And having the opportunity to use a number of coaching tools to really get individuals across the spectrum of people who are working. So whether I am giving a keynote speech at a town hall or a conference, or whether I'm doing a group workshop or one-to-one coaching, a lot of it for me is around language. What is that language we use for ourselves? And being kind to ourselves first, what is that language then we use to with the teams that we work with? And then when we take it to a really strategic level, what's the language we're using around empowering those staff who work for us on a global or inter or multinational stage? And that self-talk piece is incredibly important, because I believe in the power of words. And not in some mamby-pamby way, but the way that you aspire to be in certain places. And going back to the point I made when I was working with young people, seeing people transfer their energies and their powers into something positive when they had given themselves permission to use really powerful words was incredible. People who felt that they were nothing because parents or aunties or uncles or friends told them that they were no good, they were stupid. Working with kids with learning differences like dyslexia and dyspraxia, and getting them to understand that they see the world slightly different, that a large proportion of people who are very successful entrepreneurially, both in the present and in the past, who have created some of the most memorable inventions and business ideas, had neurodiversity. They learnt differently. They didn't see numbers and letters and spaces in the same way that many other people do. But getting them to see that they weren't stupid, but this was a gift, was powerful. Somebody came and they had dyslexia and said, I'm stupid. I don't get that. It was something really simple as saying to that individual, do you know, that's a superpower. What you have is a gift. And the moment you start focusing on it as a gift, you don't focus on the other stuff and you share that gift with other people. Being in a room with young people who have those difficulties in learning and being able to say to them, this is actually a superpower or gift you had, was incredible to see the turnaround because they took ownership of that. Rather than seeing it as a negative point of view, they took ownership. And so it brings me full circle back to this whole point about working twice as hard. Why do I vehemently disagree with it? Because I believe the whole raising of us as individuals is a communal thing. You know, I always say to teachers when I work with them, don't you ever tell a student that they're stupid. Don't ever tell them that they can't be able to achieve. It's important to be able to say that, you know, you may have to adjust your behavior. Or, you know, in order to be able to get where you want to get, it is about adjusting your behavior. It is about looking at things slightly different. But once you throw in that negative self-talk, there are so many people who believe that. I've been into schools where and places where young people swore. And they swore because they thought they could disarm me. I swear right back at them. I say, don't give me none of your shit. I'll give it right back to you. You're not allowed to swear, sir. Of course I was going to swear. I'll drop every kind of F-bomb, G-bomb, H-bomb, any kind of letter in front of them. And they're like, wow. And I go, okay, now we got that out of the way. Let's start talking about the proper stuff. What are you going to do about yourself and how can we help? And not only would we be talking directly to the students, but we're talking to the teachers. We're talking to people in the community, talking to parents and guardians to say, you know, these are the things that we need to constantly do as habits around the way that we speak and the way that we form our words. And I'm a big believer in books. So I'm going to share a couple of books for those of you who are listening and can't see this on video. You know, a couple of books that sit in my library. Think and Grow Rich. Well, actually, this is Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, because I wanted to kind of like get it, you know, specifically for for me as a black man. And the author, Dennis Crimbrough, basically builds on the concepts of Napoleon Hill about, you know, almost like as a man thinketh. You know, if you want to be able to set goals and create systems, you've got to start putting those words into place, whether you're writing it down in a journal or whether you're putting it down as goals. What are the things that you are aiming towards? The other one that is a key book of mine, you can see it's actually falling apart here. Look, there's little tea stains on the back. God knows what year this was born. 80 pence this book was. It said 80 pence net. The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. Again, another powerful book that focuses on language and how through practical applications. And yes, it is quite faith driven, but I'm a spiritual person. I'm cool. You know, even though I'm not religious, I can work with this. How can you use that language to be able to move yourself and your ideas to the next level? Many people probably would have known of the Stephen R. Covey book, which I've just revisited, the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And again, a lot of that is about language. What's the language we're using? And one of my favorite books, Inner Story, Understanding Your Mind and Changing, Understand Your Mind, Change Your World, written by Dr. Tim O'Brien. And I'm going to give you this last one. I'm going to tell you why this Inner Story one is so special to me as well. So the author, Dr. Tim O'Brien, was my head of year at school when I used to go to Whitmore High School in Harrow. Actually, my headmistress went on to become the head of Ofsted. Read into that what you will. It wasn't my fault. But I remember many years ago, I reconnected with Dr. Tim through Twitter. I'm not on Twitter anymore. That's a toxic cesspit of whatever. But when I was on there anyway, we reconnected. He got hold of me. I was like, oh my God, this is my teacher from school. We met. Went to a hotel, just found out exactly what we were doing. And again, you know, I'm in a personal development space. He just said, look, you know, I remember being in school, you were always willing to debate and always willing to be challenging teachers. And a lot of teachers couldn't handle that because they just wanted you to be submissive. And they felt that when you pushed back against them, you were aggressive. There was an incident that I share wherever I go where I was in school and I accidentally pushed the dinner lady. And to give you the context, I was one of my colleagues, I think her name was Tracy. We were having a play fight in the dinner hall and I thought she had tugged my shirt and I turned around to just gently push her. But there was a dinner lady coming towards me and I pushed her and she fell over a table. The dinner ladies wanted me expelled from school. The head decided that I was going to be suspended unofficially for 3 days to cool down so that it would be people would see it, but it wouldn't be on my records. It wouldn't affect me getting into sixth form college, which was the case back in the day. I remember crying my eyes out and explaining to my parents, this wasn't like me. This, you know me, I'm a prefect. You know, or why would I jeopardize that? And many years later, I bumped up with Dr. Tim. And he gave me a breakdown as to how he had my corner. And he basically fought for me. There were a lot of teachers who just thought, why is he doing this? And he just said, look, you know, you're not going to make a statistic out of this young black man. He has always represented the school well in music and in sports. He's a likable student. He's a prefect. He made a mistake. Yes, he's explained what happened. Whether you agree with him or not, he's explained. And I think if you're just going to go down the route of being able to suspend this boy from school just because you are think he's a statistic or a typical black boy, you are in you're barking up the wrong tree. And he fought for me. And when he told me this, like I'm crying my eyes out, man. And I'm like, my gosh, I didn't even realize this. This man had a massive impact on me. But he was always one to encourage me. He was always like, Dave, you know what? Look, at the end of the day, you're going to be an influential person. Whenever you speak, make sure you speak and use it to influence people, to take people on a journey. Understand the power of your words. Understand the influence and the impact of your words. And it's quite crazy to think that this man who told me this at 15, alongside some other influential individuals, now many years later, he meets me and I'm a podcast host and I'm a professional speaker and I'm doing coaching. And it really made me think that if I unpick it and go back, somebody placed something in my mind that allowed me to realize what the possibility was about what I was capable of doing. And for me as a coach, and for me as somebody who works in this space where words are really important, this is one of the reasons why I say to individuals, don't start with a negative talk. Does that mean that negative talk is not part and parcel of what will be in our mind? Of course it is. There's plenty of research. I think there was a research I was looking at to see if I can find it on my machine. Okay. The psychological processes mediate the impact of familiar social circumstances and life events on mental health. And in that book, the authors, P. Kinderman and M. Schwana, they talk about the fact that if you fill your mind or your words with a lot of negative talk, it can actually end up affecting your mental health and it can spark episodes of depression and low self-esteem. But on the flip side, you've got these guys, as I mentioned, Norman Vincent Peale, Stephen Covey, Dennis Kimbrough and Napoleon Hill. You've got Dr. Tim O'Brien talking about how can you understand how your mind works and be able to use words that will change your state. There was a fabulous story I hear many years ago, and I've got no idea the validity of it. And I still need to go and check it on Snopes or one of those sites. But and even if it's true, even if it's not true, I love the concept of the anecdote. And it was about a man who locked himself in a fridge or who got locked in a fridge. And actually, I don't think it's true, but I'm just going to go with the story anyway. But apparently this man, he locked himself in a fridge and he died in the fridge. People came the next day and they found that he was frozen. And what was quite peculiar about that is that the fridge wasn't on, but he had shut the door and assumed that because the door had locked, that the fridge was still on and he literally froze to death. I'm going to check the validity of that story to back it up. But it makes me think about people who, I know when my wife went to Tony Robbins, she walked on coals. It was about self-talk. I know there are individuals who will go and jump in ice cold water and being able to come out like Wim Hof, it always then come back to me, Wim Hof. And others who will do these incredibly feats that will seem beyond human capacity. But a lot of it is because they are thinking about the messages that they want to put in their brain. They are thinking about the habits in terms of their language that they want to create. And a lot of that affects the way not only that they think, but how their body reacts to situations as well. And I say this to say that the working twice as hard as white people, or working twice as hard as men for women, or working twice as hard in any capacity, for me, the reason I will always push back against this is that I'm not going to discount the fact that we come from different spaces in terms of class and privilege and access to, you know, we're around the family or whoever we're surrounded with. However, if you have an alternative, why would you want to be able to be in that space where you reaffirm that negative self-talk, that kind of talk which debilitates you and makes you seem in many respects that you are starting from a really negative point of view? And when you say work twice as hard, if I'm here in the UK and I'm working twice as hard, do I have to do the same when I go to Ghana? Do I have to do the same when I go to Australia? Do I have to do the same when I go to Brazil? Is it universal? Or is it just a reaction that people have to colonialism when you're in a white dominant country the UK or America. Now, I'm an international speaker. I have traveled all around the world. The only continent I've not been to is Antarctica. And the one thing I can tell you, when I get onto a stage, even though I share the stage with many incredible speakers, I go onto the stage as David McQueen, because my talk is, I need to go up there and I need to share my story, because my story, I deserve to be here. And that's a mantra I tell all my speakers. Before you go up and speak, and this is something for free, I get them to tap on their fingers when they're up there. I deserve to be here. I deserve to be here. And it's an incredible bit of self-talk to get people to understand about putting yourself in state, understanding how your words can change your whole posture, your whole demeanor, the whole breathing, the whole way you present to individuals. When you're thinking about leaders who want to be able to go into meetings and have a sense of executive presence or authority so people will listen to them. Again, this whole thing about the state and the language that you use is incredibly important. And when you're coming from a space where you start to put yourself in from a deficit narrative, here's the thing. If you do work twice as hard as anybody, be it race or gender or what have you, how do you measure that working twice as hard? What does that mean? And what happens if you work twice as hard and you still get paid less? For me, that's idiocy. I would rather to work the same and get paid less. I ain't working twice as hard as you to get paid that. No, I'm going to do the job that I've got to do. But again, as I said in there, you know, for me, part of it is working smart. It's understanding that, you know, when you are in these spaces, what do you do that will elevate you? And don't get me wrong. There are going to be certain careers and certain paths that, depending on access, depending on whether or not you're working in an environment that can be quite toxic, depending on who you're working with, sometimes that will limit you. The environment, I'm not going to make any bones about that. But I will say, especially in a time when we are have so much access to technology, when we can relatively work quite globally, or when we are in our spaces of work, we can learn methods and tools around how we navigate the workplace, which is why I said in the beginning, the reason why I won't use that term is because I've learned basic economics. I learned how the world works, and I've learned workplace politics. I know how to be a chameleon. I know how to go and talk to a group of young men and drop two bars and be quite lyrical with them with some street talk. And I know how to flip it up when I go to the House of Lords, that at the end of the day, I'll be a chameleon there and I'll change my vernacular. I won't be all poshy, but I will make sure that I adapt my language accordingly. And that adaptation, or that evolution, for me, is what's really important in terms of learning that role of language, the role of the words that we use. So no, I won't be working twice as hard as anybody else. I'm going to work smart. I'm fortunate enough that I can say without boasting that I've been in a position where I've got an amazing mentor, one of my mentors, Liam Black, really successful social and impact entrepreneur. He's made a massive difference in the way that I approach my business. Another peer mentor of mine is a guy called Dean Forbes, very successful businessman. Love his approach, love his focus, absolutely made a massive impact. One of my younger mentors, Andy Iam, has been incredibly impactful to me about the way that I process stuff, think about my habits. I think about my wife. She's been a powerful source for me to think about my language and what truth I speak out into people and make sure that I understand them. And so many men and women who have been mentors as peers, or some youngers, some olders, who have spoken words into my life but have reminded me that the words that I use are very powerful. And so even when I go onto places like LinkedIn to provoke debate, or even when I do this podcast, or when I go and speak, my main thing is that I realize how powerful my words are and what a difference they can make. And that I want more than anything else for people to realize that when you do have self-talk and when you're thinking about it, be very careful about what you tell yourself. For others, they may listen to this and they go, well, look, you know what, Dave, that may be your experience, but it's very different for me. And I would just say, well, just try it. Think about what you want to do and where you want to go and the language you want to use about getting there. Surround yourself by individuals. Soak up information and knowledge. There's some, you know, 10-year-olds are online now. 10-year-olds using TikTok and YouTube and being able to understand how technology can make them into 6- and 7-figure companies, 10-year-olds. Yes, they're surrounded by parents who are, you know, incredibly ambitious and what have you, but there are individuals who have taken advantage of that learning. And for me, yes, there's going to be privilege. There's all kinds of isms, racism, prejudice, and what have you. But as a leader in whatever sector you are working in, be it in the corporate sector, the public sector, the third sector, working in the community, a leader in your faith groups, a lot of it is about language. How do you take people to the next level? How do you lift them up? How do you empower them to recognize that they have that destiny in their hands? Yes, you know, if you're going to go in and you can be working alongside somebody who's from a family who's got four generations of wealth and they're very rich, you can work twice as hard as you want to. You ain't ever going to be as wealthy as that person beside you. Or you may never have access to political circles, even if you work hard, because you just do not have that familial privilege or connection. And that's okay. Why are you comparing yourself to someone else? You know, there are people, I have got no intention of being a billionaire. But I think of my friend Charmaine, Charmaine Hayden, shouting her out now. Charmaine has ambitions to be a billionaire, and I believe she will. So for me, I'd like to impact a billion people. That'd be good for me, but she wants to be a billionaire, and that's absolutely fine. And the language that's being used there around it is important. So for me, that's her lane. I'm staying in my lane, and it's absolutely fine. So I leave it on this last point just to say that we don't have to agree, and that's the beauty of debate. There are individuals who probably listen to this and will be saying to me, Dave, you haven't got a clue. And that's absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with having a differing point of view. But the one that I use informs my work and informs the work that I use with my clients and the individuals around me. And I've seen anecdotal and hard evidence of when people have used language to shift and change. And not in and of itself, but working alongside the environments that they are, the support, the mentoring, the both the inner family and the family that they choose, making sure that there's a whole system working around them to make sure that not the words, not just the words, but the whole thinking works to actually lift them up and make them do better. And those are my thoughts. And I welcome differences of opinion, as always. I welcome individuals who will challenge some of the concepts that I brought here, and we'll see it slightly differently, because that's how we learn. It's not about anybody having any corner on absolute truth. It's about thinking, how do we use that language? How would you use a self-talk to minimize the negative self-talk and to raise up the positive self-talk, but to be able to surround it with an environment and a system and people that allow us to live into the words that we actually speak? And so I would finish on two words here, sawubona and namaste. I'll leave you to go and find out what they mean for yourself. But that's my final thoughts for today. Thank you very much for listening to this week's episode. And as always, I hope that, as through all my episodes, that it's given some kind of clarity and some kind of a different point of view around leadership communication and the consistency that comes with communication. As with all these things, you can find me. This video will be up on YouTube, or you can get the podcast on Spotify or Apple Music or Google Play or wherever else you access your podcast. And what I'd like you to do, please, is just go ahead and share or comment and rate, whether it's on my blog, whether it's on the video, whether it's on any one of those platforms for the podcast. And I appreciate you. Thank you for being able to take the time out, as always, to listen. And I enjoy your feedback. Please give me feedback, because whether it's on, again, any one of the platforms, digital platforms that we have, it's always about learning. And I look forward to you tuning in to the next episode of Leadership Decoded. And until then, stay safe and take care.